Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Everyone, it's on the show today. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee, terrific service department that backs it up, whether it's routine or difficult, all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And by the way, they're still looking for new technicians. Always. Todd, listen to this one. This is an NFL scout. Former NFL scout. Former. And I think this was written for WindyCityEndZone.com. Okay? So, of course, the Bears have the first overall pick. Everyone's been talking about former Heisman Trophy winner Caleb Williams. Okay. 2022 Heisman Trophy winner. So this is what he writes about him. He is loaded with God-given raw arm strength and elite ability to create and extend. He said that is the draw to him. But he's underdeveloped in the finer points of playing quarterback. His skill set doesn't translate well to the NFL game, which is about quick time to throw, precise downfield ball placement, and ball security. He said, now he says he does check the box on ball security pretty well. He says 2023 went sideways for him. He says, when I watched him in the 2022 Heisman Trophy season, my grade through, quote, my NFL colored glasses was second round. He tended to hold the ball too long and lock in on receivers. Both are true, by the way. The first three games he wrote of 2023, it's a former NFL scout, San Jose State, Nevada, and Stanford, quote, gave him optimism that he had improved. But then the Arizona State game happened. He was excellent against Colorado, but then mediocre against Arizona. And I watched the Arizona game, and he is so right about that. And then things went off the rails. Says the true litmus test would be against ranked competition. So what happened? He writes that USC faced Notre Dame, Utah, Cal, Washington, Oregon, and UCLA and dropped five out of the six. And according to him, in his opinion as a scout, Williams became unglued. Here are the concerns. And this is a long list. There are 11. There are 10 of them. Okay. And again, you've heard nothing but awesome things about him, right, Todd? Right?
For the most part, up until the last couple weeks.
Yeah. Downward trajectory. Williams regressed in 2023. Two, NFL expectations are crazy high. He says those expectations alone could possibly cause him to be a bust. That's only time will tell on that. Time to throw. Pro Football Focus recorded Caleb Williams at 3.44 seconds in 2022 and 3.21 seconds in 2023. He was sacked 63 times in 22 and 23. Now remember, that's part of a product of the USC offensive line. All right. Only seven NFL quarterbacks are over 3 seconds. According to Next Gen Stats, only three are over 3 seconds. The slowest is, ta-da, Justin Fields of the Bears, 3.23 seconds, and he, in the last 2 years, has been sacked 99 times. Okay, this scout says it's a glorified system quarterback. He said he did an independent study this season. They said Williams' best completion percentages came throwing 44 to 62% short passes, His three worst games, he only threw 55.9% to 57.5% that were short passes. He is not a big game quarterback. Listen to this stat. Not a big game quarterback. In the past two seasons, what is Caleb Williams as the starting quarterback, his record and USC's record against ranked teams in 11 games?
I would say 4-7.
2-9. Okay, now this one we all know. This is one everybody knows. Fumbles. He's played 36 games in his collegiate career. He has 32 fumbles. Post-game conduct. Okay? Post-game conduct. And I would then put in pre-game conduct. Refused to shake hands with Utah and refused to talk to reporters after the UCLA loss. And it goes back to the comment I made about Dave Pasch. You know, the broadcasters come in and they sit down with the head coach, they sit down with the coordinators, and they'll sit down with key players. So, in other words, they sat when they did North Carolina. They had four North Carolina games. All four times Drake May sat down with them. They said whenever they did a USC game, Caleb Williams was never made available. It doesn't mean he's a bad kid or anything like that, but you're the starting quarterback. You're the reigning Heisman Trophy winner. It's not a question of publicity. You're a person that people want to talk to. Right? People want to talk to you to get your perspective on the team, the game, the opponent, things like that. And he was 0-for. He didn't attend one of them. And then, of course, this post-game conduct, you know, the Utah thing just left. And then he didn't talk to reporters after the loss to UCLA. You're the starting quarterback. I hate to say it. It comes with the territory. Okay? He writes number 8, nature. Wants to get out of the structure of a passer and get reckless as a runner, which increases the injury risk. Now, I'd like to point out that the USC offensive line is, and he had to run a lot. But when you have a combination of a quarterback that holds the ball longer, which he does, and has an offensive line that is up and down, that combination of holding it longer naturally to begin with and having an offensive line that can be an up-and-down situation, you are going to get out and move more and probably run more. He talked down about a fan calling him a sheep. And he does unpredictable and uncensored things ranging from painting obscenities on his fingernails, which he did in the Utah championship game. Right? Remember that? To jumping into the stands and crying in his mother's arms. 9, inexperience dealing with adversity. Now, this part I would have talked about all day and have mentioned. I think I mentioned this before you were on the show. I think it was in November. He doesn't deal with, like, people don't deal with losing well anyway, but he doesn't deal with adversity well. Sports Illustrated wrote on Thanksgiving weekend that Williams said, "I've never been in this situation where I'm 7-5 and there are no playoff hopes at the end of the season. I'm dealing with it emotionally, dealing with it spiritually and physically." Okay. Well, guess what? If you're going to be one of the top 5 picks in the NFL draft, you are not going to be going to the San Francisco 49ers. Okay? And then there's number 10, the Holiday Bowl. USC bounced right back, same offensive line, same defense, and beat Louisville with Miller Moss at quarterback. First career start, and he matched Williams' USC high of 6 touchdown passes in a game. How about that evaluation? That was... I would say... unfiltered?
Yeah.
How about that?
I would say the physical stuff can probably be fixed by NFL coaches. The maturity stuff is probably the bigger concern to me.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Because the physical gifts are there.
The physical gifts are there, but how he plays That's where the interesting part comes in, is how he plays. Holds the ball too long. Doesn't translate in the NFL. I mean, you've got to break him of that as quickly as possible, because early on in his career, he's not going to be able to survive. Okay? That's one. Taking off and running, which means there's the possibility of hits, right? But also, you're going to be in a situation where you're not going to... There's a good chance. Look at Bryce Young. Bryce Young is out there trying to play quarterback with the Carolina Panthers. What did Carolina win this year? Two games?
I was going to say one, maybe.
One game. Right. Could be just one game. That's right. After all that success at Alabama. And there's another element that comes into it, too, where I know that the physical gifts, in terms of size and so forth, enters into play for Caleb Williams, as opposed to Bryce Young, who was not big in stature. But some, you know, I think you've got to take the full package of player when you look at it. And here's a small one. Bryce Young played in the Sugar Bowl, which was not a playoff game. And Caleb Williams opted out of the Holiday Bowl. Now it's like, well, it's the Holiday Bowl and it's a Sugar Bowl. No, it's one played and the other one didn't. And I think that's something that you do need to take a long, hard look at with certain... there's certain things that you need to take a look at with players. And I'll give you one. In a 12-team playoff, if any player who's not injured, okay, opts out of a playoff game, and I'm a general manager, now if I'm the general manager, we're going to be going 0-17. We're going to be setting all sorts of records. Okay, it's not going to be good. But if I'm the general manager, I don't draft him. I'm in a playoff game. You quit. I realize that that's... because to me, there's a lot of talent out there, and I can get somebody else who's willing to play in the big... If you're not willing to play in the big moment for your team, are you going to be willing to play in the big moment for us?
And
I'm talking about a playoff game, Todd.
Yeah,
I'm not.
Yeah, yeah. I keep seeing speculation. I'm kind of on your side on this, and I kind of keep seeing speculation that that this is going to happen. And I just find it hard to believe that you would put all that work into the season, still have a shot at a national championship game, and then just up and leave in January to go train for the NFL draft.
Look, I've been around a lot of players who have now opted out, and what have I said every time? Like, okay, I got it. You know, I understand what their situation is and so forth. But a playoff game? I don't know. That would be, to me, I need to get somebody who believes that, look, when the money's on the table, they're going to do what they can to be there.
I don't think there's any doubt about that. And it's... a lot of the time, you've said this numerous times, a lot of the time it's not the player, it's other people in their ears, and I just wouldn't want to be the first one that decides to do that. And I just feel like there's going to be at least one player next year that opts out before the semifinal or the final.
And I'm not discounting it's a possibility. Okay. I'm not discounting that's a possibility, but I'm saying it would affect how I feel about Because, look, there are a lot of fish in the sea. A lot of really good players. I mean, we just, for example, I mean, who was the last pick in the draft 2 years ago?
The starting quarterback in the suit, one of the starting quarterbacks in the Super Bowl.
Right. So there are a lot of people out there if you do it right.
Well, I guess my only argument for that is if you're picking at the top of the draft, you usually haven't hit on those smart picks in the late rounds either.
No, you haven't. That's why I laughed. Remember, it was a couple years ago, there was a guy that made a statement about Jack Ham would only be on special teams in today's NFL, and it was Doug Whaley. And you do know that Doug Whaley, with the 10th overall pick in the draft, traded the pick to Kansas City, and they picked Patrick Mahomes. And you wonder why he's no longer a general manager in the National Football League. It's really... I mean, those are some of the, like, there's issues you got to look at with guys.
It's going to be interesting to see what the Bears do. I feel like there's more value right now in keeping Justin Fields than there is in taking Caleb Williams, and I think I like Jalen Daniels better than May right now.
That's an interesting one too. Because I've heard some people say a lot more things about Daniels in the last couple of weeks. Like, you know, my point about Carter has been this. Why wouldn't I have drafted Carter? This is why I would not have drafted Carter. Okay? All right. He reportedly left the scene of the crash before emergency personnel arrived and then returned to the scene 2 hours later. Okay. It doesn't matter if it's like somebody he doesn't know or somebody he does know, but in the end, one of his, quote, teammates was there and he left. Okay. See, again, that's what that's why I wouldn't have picked him. And I know he's a great talent. I mean, there's no getting around what his talent is, but talent doesn't trump everything in my mind. Because games are hard. They're difficult. There's ups and downs. You got to fight through them. You got to fight through losing streaks. You got to handle success. You know, there's all sorts of things that you have to handle, and you have to do it as a team. I mean, I don't know.
I'm guessing this is probably not going to be the first time we have this conversation about Caleb Williams before the draft at the end of April.
Probably not. but, I mean, because I have no dog in the hunt.
Oh, no. You know,
I mean, I don't care. But I thought the reason I brought it up was quite simple. And that was because... was because it was interesting.
Yeah.
It was just a completely different opinion than everything you've read about him to this point. I mean, just completely different. Now, that's just his opinion. Remember what I was talking about Dave Jones? You put your opinion out there? And not everybody has to agree with it? We're going to find out. Won't be the last time we talk about Caleb Williams, among others. Quarterback's going to be, again, big in this draft. Talked about Daniels. You talked about Drake May. Yeah, I mean, you know, Bo Nix. A lot of interesting players out there. A lot of players.
J.J. McCarthy's moving up the boards now, too.
J.J. McCarthy's a good quarterback. I think he throws a good ball. He moves well. He will not be an instant starter in the NFL, but he eventually, I think, will be a starting quarterback in the NFL.
It'd be interesting to see how long it takes him to adjust from that offense where they really didn't have to rely on him as much.
Yeah, but you know what? I still felt going into every game he was the X factor. You know? And, I mean, I thought Jim did a good job with him. I think he throws a good ball and I think he's smart.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Okay, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties, by the way. A great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. They go over every vehicle, and that's why they end up with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. Makes the buying experience way better. Terrific service department. They're looking for more technicians, by the way. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Something I did not get into with Mike DeCourcy was the comment made yesterday by Matt in a stunningly angry commentary. It kind of felt like you were taken aback.
I saw Matt in the wild last night at my game. It's amazing how calm he is in real life.
Oh, good.
He's not like that out in the wild.
But Matt was absolutely correct about Rick Pitino in throwing his team publicly under the bus in this vein. If you're around teams, and I'm fortunate to be around teams all the time. James has been tremendous to me. Mike has been tremendous to me, as have the other coaches. Joe is like that, Bill O'Brien, James, Tom Bradley, Dick Carter, Bruce, Jerry, right, Ed, Pat, Jim Ferry, Micah, now Mike. I've always allowed me to be around it, so I see the good with the bad. But the idea always is that what happens, quote, in Vegas stays in Vegas, right? And you see the good, you see the bad. You mean there's certain things that happen, like, okay, right? And when it comes to being in public about it, you don't throw people under the bus. Now, if a coach wants to send a message to his team in a press conference, which many have done over time, they have their ways of sending messages. But you don't throw them under the bus. They are who they are. If you're an unathletic team that doesn't move well laterally, there's a way to say it. Like, it really hurt us. We've never really been the greatest lateral movement team, and it really cost us in this game, blah, blah. Okay, now, that's different than just flat out saying we're unathletic and don't move laterally. The way I phrased it, while not perfect, that's more the way to say it. Hey, look, we've never really been the greatest lateral movement team, and in a game like this, it really helped Seton Hall because we couldn't get to certain shots and they were left open. You know what I mean? Something like that. He didn't do that, and I know he did it in a very calm, measured way, but it's still a team, and just like you don't expect a teammate to throw another teammate under the bus, you don't expect the coach to throw the team under the bus. And Matt was right about that yesterday. I mean, I may have kidded him a little bit. But Patino did make one statement that I thought was really, really worth examining out of all of it. And, of course, it gets lost in everything because, you know, he did throw them, you know, and I'm not enjoying myself. And, you know, okay, I got it. But when he said, my team hears me, but they don't listen. And he talked about now, I don't know if it's an exaggeration or not. I've only seen St. John's play a couple times this year. And, you know, and I didn't see full games, but I saw him play a couple times. And obviously St. John's was at that, when we were in New York, St. John's played Fordham in the second game, saw some of that before I left. But the part about hearing and listening, I mentioned that he said it took him 2 months to understand, you know, you got to make a bounce pass in this situation. Now, he may be exaggerating the time frame, whatever. But that is something that you need to, that needs further examination. We do have to remember that we are in a post-COVID era right now, and all of these student athletes, all of them, went through COVID and were doing things online for a period of time, whether it was high school or if you're a veteran early in your college career. And you do wonder about the ability of somebody like that in terms of socialization, right? Because everybody's supposed to be isolated in the whole deal. All of us were, I mean, for a period of time, were isolated from the suit. So it wasn't, you know, a lot of people felt that part worked out. but, you know, they wanted people isolated. Okay, well, isolated means, you know, no physical contact, not being around people. Yeah, you can do stuff and talk online and whatever, but that has to be brought into play. And I know, for example, in my classroom, I really have to explain and have them recite back to me what the assignment is. I make them do that now. Okay, how long is the assignment? Is it everybody? And I'll write it as they say it. Okay? All right, how long is the assignment? Boom. What day is it due? What time is it due by? You know, and I'm writing all this up on the board. But they have to repeat it back. Because I'm trying to get them to not just hear it, but listen, because I'm still getting, despite that, I'm still getting some that aren't the right time. Not completely, you know, and I've had people, like I had one guy handed in 2 o'clock the next day and was due 9 o'clock the previous morning. Like, okay. And I'm thinking to myself, I swear I made that clear. And I made it clear by writing it up on the board and having them recite it back. But again, not everybody's in class. Not everybody's there. I'd say of 22 I have in a class right now, I think there were 16 there this morning. That means 6 weren't there. Okay. Now, we had fun today because, they, you know, everybody's asking me about my thoughts on the college football playoff and things like that. And their next project's due Monday, and I wanted to make sure they were comfortable with it. They were, so we talked about other things today. But I'm in the same boat in that classroom as I'm dealing with 18 to 22-year-olds. Now, I'd say, let's be fair, I'm probably dealing with 20 to 22-year-olds. Maybe there's a 19-year-old in there somewhere, but it's a 400-level class. You're usually not taking 400-level classes as a sophomore. You can, but it's not out of the realm, but still. Go ahead.
I was going to say, in the fall, I coached, I guess they were third and fourth grade girls basketball. And my daughter was at the end of nursery school into kindergarten during COVID. And I notice it at that level that they lost a whole year of learning how to interact and socialize with each other. And I found that I was doing a lot of things along that nature than basketball, just because I think that's where we're really going to see it come to a head is in 4 or 5 years when those kids that were in elementary school reach mm-hmm. high school and college. Cause I think that's where it really, really hurt those kids is in learning to learn how to socialize.
I mean, but in that case, see, I agree with Patino about that they hear him, but they don't listen.
It's active versus passive.
Right. And again, in hearing him, he says, look, they're respectful. They hear me, which means they're quiet and they're looking at him, but they aren't listening to him, which means they have to absorb it. Right? Okay. Right. In other words, all right, I'm not quite sure what you mean here. I've got a question. Great. And I tell them, same thing in the classroom. I said, no such thing as a bad question. I said, because if you have a question, that means you have a doubt. Okay.
And somebody else probably has the same question.
Right. And I tell them, I said, there are three or four other people that don't.
And I think that's part of the socializing part too, just being scared to voice something in a room of even people that you're comfortable with.
Right. And that's something that I thought it was an interesting point he made. In other words, he said they're respectful. They hear me, but they don't listen. Well, so you get two out of three. And I go back to the Nebraska game on Saturday that Penn State played. There's a certain way that Penn State wanted to attack Nebraska, which was very similar in the way they wanted to attack Texas A&M back in November when they were in Orlando. And they did it like one out of four times. And every time out, they kept saying, look, we keep telling you, you've got it, blah, 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 blah. And they go the next time out. We need you to, because I talked to the coaches about this. And and that's what I'm talking about, hearing versus listening. They aren't out there deliberately not doing it. And here's another element that always has to be, and I brought this up a lot on the show over the years, but it's worth repeating here. I've always said that if you're running a play in practice in football and one guy doesn't get it, you can't use the play. And it's a person you'd like to have out there as opposed to a backup, because you're trying not to tip a play off by having a backup out there. Okay? And if you have one person, and usually it's a couple, but if you have a couple guys out of 11 that can't run, that don't get it, you can't run the play. You can't. Same thing in basketball. So now I got five guys out there. If one guy doesn't quite run it right or is in the wrong spot, to go back to the Nebraska-Texas A&M examples, if you got one guy that didn't quite catch on as to what they're supposed to do to make something happen, it botches everything up and you have to go to something else. And that is so you could have four guys that are listening, not just hearing, but listening, fine, and one doesn't. And you're like, guess what? Now you have a problem. I thought that was, of all the statements he made, the other statements, he threw his team under the bus, and I would be critical of that, just like Matt was. Because, again, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. Teams are teams. There are certain things you keep in-house. He can tell his team to them, hey, look, if he wants to tell them that, fine. But, you don't do that in public. But the part about the hearing, the respectful, the hearing versus listening, that is worth having a long discussion about everywhere in sports right now. Everywhere.
You say that, and I think back to last night to the game that I covered where one of the teams wanted to run a high pick and roll over and over again, and I think 98% of the time the coach had to holler at the big girl to roll.
Right.
I'm sure they ran it a lot in practice yesterday, but
yeah.
And that's along your point where I'm sure that they were respectful yesterday, but you know, you're not. It is an active thing, and you know, I think that's, I don't want to say it's generational, but you know, I think we can all think of you know, some of the causes for it besides COVID. A lot of locked into your phone a lot, you know, things of that nature. It's something that, you know, that's going to be one of the things that, you know, for future coaches that are going to have to solve.
And what is the credo of every coach out there? Right. And again, you can sit there and I'm talking, these coaches have broken down because of the way technology is today. There's not an exchange of film at the airport. You've got every play of every game instantly at your fingertips, okay? So they've got everything. Their calls, what they're doing, how they're doing it, right? Everything. Okay. But it's not what they know. It's what the players know. That's the difference. It's not how much the coaches know. It's what the players know. That's a fact of life. You can be as prepared as all get out on everything, and you've gone through every scenario, and they have to be careful as to how much they give to them because there's only so much they can absorb. There is a time frame where they're good for like six or seven plays. I'm just using random numbers here. But then you, like I said, let's show you plays 8, 9, and 10. And you're like, okay, all right, I got the first six or seven plays. Okay, you know what I mean? And that is something that it's not what the coaches know. It's what the players know. And that's something, especially in this post-COVID era where there was all, where everybody was isolated, Zoom calls, things like that, so lack of socialization and so forth. They're still in a recovery period from that. And I think it's affecting, you know, how much explanation is needed in certain circumstances between coach and player. I think that's fair.
I think it's very fair.
We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Jay Billis on the Rich Eisen show says you're hearing sentiments of coaches, excuse me, leaving, going to the NFL and so forth. He says it's an excuse. He said, my thing is, hey, if you want to leave your job, go ahead. If players getting paid is so difficult to wrap your head around, then go. I mean, nothing's stopping you. Go ahead. But he offered a simple solution to the issue at hand before, saying that the NCAA and member institutions don't want to do it. The solution is sign players to contracts. They're employees, and you can sign them to a contract and put a buyout in it if you want, just like coaches. I mean, the Boston College coach left to go to the NFL. First of all, he had NFL ties before that. He was in the NFL before he went to Boston College. Now, he's actually went from Ohio State to BC. But then you saw someone leave the NFL and go to Boston College, Bill O'Brien. What does that say? Well, O'Brien went to Ohio State first, then he got the head coaching job. This is, and I love all these coaches, but it's just more coach complaining. They're making a ton of money. Things have changed. Just adjust to it. And it's not that big a deal. But if the NCAA wants to fix it, they can fix it tomorrow. All I have to do is take off all the restrictions for schools paying their athletes, and they would sign them to contracts just like they do coaches, administrators, and all that. It's really not that difficult, but we're trying to walk the line of maintaining amateurism, which is dead, and we're complaining about NIL. It's not what we thought it was going to be. What did they think it was going to be? What did they think was going to happen? Quote, I knew this was going to happen. The schools want to pay the players, they want to have the best players, and they're going to do what it takes to get them, and they're going to compete in the marketplace to do it. And once players are allowed to be paid by this unilateral wage restriction that the NCAA is using, which is violative of federal antitrust law, things will normalize. And we won't have to worry about the transfer portal. It won't be a problem anymore, just like they don't worry about coaches transferring from one school to the other. They pay their buyout. It's orderly, and everybody knows what the market is. It's not that big a deal. So, very interesting. Then we talked about J.J. Redick on the show, and I think he made an interesting comment. And he says, and his interesting comment was, do fans actually want to be educated or not? And I think some of them really do. Some of them really do. And I think there's some that just don't or can't be bothered by it. That's why we talk all the time on this show, and we're not going to be perfect at it, but we're hoping when the show's over, you know more about what's going on.